It's a couple of minutes after 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, where for the next hour programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California, Board of Regents. It's time now for Talking Animals of KUCI.
Blue bird on a telephone line, how are you? I'm feeling fine. Sweetly do I whisper your name. Lonely solo taxi ride to a cheap motel on the wrong side of the tracks. The facts are tricky to explain. Army ring bell, kingdom. filled up with misery and lies. Your lonely is a passing cause, feeds the ache of ancient scars, like ghosts beneath my bed, red on chains. Now, good luck charm, remedy, ever proved to soothe my sanity. Not bad medicine, served to ease my pain. Had to find someone to love more than the rain.
Jim White with a song called Bluebird as we slide into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, the whole nine yards is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And don't be shy. We love to get calls here at Talk Animals. And you can also reach us. Things are a little nutty, but I'm going to quickly sign on. And you can then IM us via AOL Instant Messenger. And the screen name, not surprisingly, is Talking Animals. Other ways to be in touch, less immediately, but still good as well. Emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. And checking out our website at talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net. Make no mistake. It's .net. All right. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rip-snorting rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. And meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals. And animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a reasonable balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our nifty website at www.talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast is archived. But clearly the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today our guest is Les Schobert, a consultant on zoos and captive wildlife. With 30 years of experience, including a 15-year tenure as general curator of the North Carolina Zoo and a somewhat more recent stint as animal collection curator at the L.A. Zoo. He's also been an integral part of the effort to solve the situation with Ruby, that's the African elephant torn from her elephant friend Gita, few months back at the L.A. Zoo and sent off to the Knoxville Zoo, where she's remained isolated and from the other elephants and just generally been unhappy. And so we'll find out kind of the latest on Ruby and get Les's views on the pros and cons of zoos and the key challenges facing zoos now and in the years ahead when Les Schobert joins us a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. I want to remind you of the phone numbers to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals. Not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss. Announcements, observations, of course, any news stories you might have spotted. They'd all be most welcome. The phone number is 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And we have a full house here in the studio. Whether we were expecting to or not, we do, and we're having a grand time. We want to welcome Fatima, right?
Fatima,
wrong accent. I'll get it right next time. And Sean.
Hi.
You got one of us. All right, cool. And we also have Erin, who's probably not going to speak, but we want to say hello to her as well. So if you guys want to chime in during the news segment, be our guest. Fatima, right?
Yeah.
Cool. See? Only took me one try. And Sean are training here to be on the air at KUCI. So as part of that, they get to observe various shows. And I'm not sure what you'll learn here today, but we'll do our best. All right. So turning now to interesting or important developments in recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight. And we'd love to get your comments, or at least our in-studio comments, on a discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. All right, then. Wait for it. Let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Let's start off with a fairly local story. It's a little news item we got from a Times Wire Service. They always like to credit things. Headline, first horse in Orange County with West Vile Nirus is reported. A horse in Yorba Linda has contracted West Vile Nirus. The first such case in Orange County, health officials said Thursday. The horse's condition is unknown, and officials weren't sure if it was vaccinated for the disease, said Howard Sutter of the county's health care agency. As of August 6, 62 cases of equine infection had been reported statewide, Sutter said. Of those, 32 horses died or were euthanized. Symptoms include poor movement, weakness, muscle twitching, and inability to stand, Sutter said. Horse owners can find more information at www.vetmed.ucdavis.edu/CEH. And Sean and I were talking about this before we went on the air. Some of you who are regular listeners to Talking Animals may recall that about 3 weeks ago we had Heather Herman on the show. That's the 15-year-old teenager from Denver who spearheaded the effort to get an initiative on the ballot to ban circuses with animals. And unfortunately for Heather and the rest of us who think circuses that use animals aren't necessarily the greatest thing at all, that proposal was soundly defeated by a pretty large margin. And again, those kinds of initiatives do exist in other smaller areas, but I think Ringling Brothers was spending a lot of money, putting a lot of might and machinery behind defeating this initiative. Anybody here in the studio have any thoughts on the initiative, circuses with animals?
I think I don't like going to circuses. I don't think that what they're doing is right, personally. And I used
in terms of the way they treat animals, or
in terms of the way they treat animals, if I was a parent, I would not let my kids go. For example, I used to work at TLC, and every summer we would take them to the circus, the Ringling Brothers Circus, and I would never let my kids go.
And because you think it's, you don't want the kids to see
animals.
Right. Okay. All right. Sean?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily count it too much on the circus, but I think it's not surprising that Ringling Brothers was able to defeat such a measure, because generally they have a large amount of money. They don't want Anna to be banned, so it just seemed like they were doing something in their self-interest. And really, I think it's really bad that circuses that treat their animals so cruelly.
Yeah. Well, she seemed to be fairly upbeat, all things considered, and feels like they made some inroads and educated some people, which is, again, often the most you can do. You have to sort of take these things incrementally and just win the battles that you can. And all right, so moving along, this couple items from the Orange County People for Animals, and their website is ocpausa.org. One thing kind of internationally is Austria recently joined other European countries, including Germany, Sweden, Switzerland, Ireland, and the UK, in banning the use of cruel battery cages on egg farms. The new laws will also allow hens to run free around barnyards. Lions and tigers will vanish from circus acts. Not coincidental. And pet owners, guardians, will not be allowed to crop their dogs' tails or ears. And this is something we may get into, probably will, with Les Schobert shortly. San Francisco Board of Supervisors unanimously passed a resolution calling for the last two surviving elephants at the San Francisco Zoo be transferred as soon as possible to an elephant sanctuary in California. The elephants at the zoo have suffered from degenerative health conditions for years, and this will give them a wonderful opportunity to heal and live the rest of their lives in a much better environment. Lastly, also kind of internationally, Iceland drastically reduced its whaling program and canceled plans to kill 250 whales this year. However, they have not yet completely ceased their program, as they still plan to kill 25 minke whales. And it goes on from there. Anybody have any thoughts on any of those things before we keep moving? No?
Nope.
All right, cool. All right, well, that's good. Just want to make sure everybody has a chance to weigh in. So here's one that was sent to us by a listener. And again, we love when people send in news items, tidbits, announcements. This was actually from Brussels. You may have heard about this or read about this. But a Belgian airliner made an emergency landing after an agitated passenger, a cat, got into the cockpit and attacked the co-pilot, the airline said Tuesday. The SN Brussels flight from the Belgian capital to Vienna, Austria, had been in the air about 20 minutes Monday when it was noticed that a passenger's pet had escaped from its cage, although it is not yet clear how, according to an airline statement. Once free, the animal proceeded to wander around the cabin, slipping in the cockpit when meals were being delivered to the two-man flight crew, it said. At this stage, an animal became agitated and nervous. An airline spokesman added the cat scratched the co-pilot's arm. The pilot decided to return to Brussels as a precaution, and the 58 passengers departed once more 2 hours later on another flight. All right, it's time for our mid-news animal quiz, and this is a true-false question, and we have a prize, as always, here on Talking Animals, for the first person who calls in with the correct answer. It's a true-false question. Might even let the people in studio play. That would seem like a nice thing to do. So here's the thing. It's a true-false question, and we'll also let people, of course, listening, call at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. We have a variety of prizes. We've got CDs. We've got books. People who've been guests. We also have a book, Shirley MacLaine's book. She hasn't been a guest yet, but at some point maybe she will. But we have her book as a prize because her dog co-wrote the book. And that was a fine literary effort by both parties, I thought. And we've got cat toys and dog collars and T-shirts and jewelry with animal charms, etc. So you have your choice of any of those things if you're the first person to call in or first person in studio to answer this question correctly. Ready?
Ready.
Okay. True or false? Bumblebees use 21 muscles to sting. True or false? 949-824-5824. 949-UCI-KUCI. Anybody? Fatima? Sean?
I didn't know they had muscles, actually.
All right, well, you're not only not going to win, you might have to exit the studio if you're going to make those kind of comments. But anyway, all right, so we're going to carry on. Someone may still call in, and, Fatima's still pondering that. Sean seems to be deep in thought, so we're just going to keep going. And return to a story that we've covered pretty extensively here on Talking Animals. This is sort of an update on tiger rescue. Either of you guys heard anything about tiger rescue? Do you know anything about the...
Recently, no.
You know what it is? I mean, I'm talking about actual facility, not the term.
Oh,
yeah. It's a place in Colton, California, and the short version of the story is that it was a so-called sanctuary for many years, and There's tons and tons of tigers there. And anyway, the facility and the animals were dreadfully neglected, criminally neglected. And the proprietor's up on some pretty serious charges. So this is something we've talked about and tried to drum up volunteers to help out. And we've been out there to help out a few times. Anyways, finally, the good news is these tigers sort of in little batches have been relocated to this amazing sanctuary in Northern California called R2000. So our little story here today is a second group of tigers from a defunct Colton sanctuary was moved recently to a new home in California's Gold Rush Country, leaving 22 exotic felines still to be transported. The nine big cats were loaded up early one Saturday morning, and they arrived at the Performing Animal Welfare Society's R2000 sanctuary in San Andreas at about 6:30 p.m. the same day. It went very smoothly and quickly, said Michael Markarian, president of the Fund for Animals, which has been caring for the animals since May 2003. They're on the road by about 9 a.m., and it's really cool up there. I was up there recently, and they have, I think it's a 10-acre, I don't know if it said here, but it's a 10-acre enclosure for the tigers. And so it's such a great happy ending to a really awful story for a long time for these tigers. So anyway, so that's cool. I think there's only one more batch of tigers to be moved, and they're just sort of doing it slowly so they can kind of introduce them into their new environment, make sure everybody's getting along and stuff. So maybe one or two more quick items, and then into the Comedy Corner, and then on to our guest, Les Schobert. But in terms of an event coming up, just a big heads up, this is for October 2nd, Saturday, October 2nd. The Farm Sanctuary is doing its Walk for Farm Animals at the Venice Beach Boardwalk. And registration is actually that day, although you can, for registration and pledge forms, you can go to www.walkforanimals.org and get your form, and you'll get a T-shirt, and you can make your checks payable, all that information. In fact, someone very local that's involved with that. It's Karen Coyne, and you can call her at 949-370-8484. Karen Coyne at 949-370-8484. 8484. You guys do any walks for one organization or another, or fundraising things?
No,
this is your chance.
This might be the first one.
Right. Okay, well, that's if we have time later, we'll get back to a few more news items. But, here's somebody calling. I wonder if, let's see if they, hi, you're on the air live on KUCI's Talking Animals. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI's Talking Animals. Hello?
Hi, this is Lil.
I'm sorry?
This is Lil from Toronto. I think the answer is true.
Oh, okay, you're calling in on the quiz question. Yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It is true.
Oh, good.
So, I'll tell you what, since we're running a little behind on time, if you could email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com, and then we will figure out which prize you would like, and then we'll get you that prize.
Okay, yes, I enjoy your show. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for calling. Bye-bye now. All right, cool. Well, I'm sad, Fatima, that you didn't get it, and Sean. Just would have been nice if it was in-house, but it's nice that someone called in and got it, right? So, okay, so anyway, of course, if there are ever any news stories or announcements or events that you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email, again, is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, yes, perhaps redundantly so, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check it out. The site is talkinganimals.net, again, .net. And sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of all the shows, assorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. And we just actually put up a new photo gallery, speaking of ARC 2000, of that. And there's some really cool shots of elephants, one being hosed down, and one in their so-called jacuzzi, and some other just general shots. So this is like a 2,300 acre sanctuary. It's just gorgeous. It's just great. Anyways, so please stop by and take a look around that site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which is always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Bill Cosby with a vintage piece called Dogs on today's Comedy Corner here at KUCI.
People don't listen to their dogs. How many of you have dogs and you hear your dog bark and you don't get up and go out and say, what is it? What's bothering him? All you do is lay in the bed. Will you shut up all that noise? Now, you bought a dog to tell you when somebody's coming. And as soon as the dog says, arf, 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 you say, will you please shut up all that noise? Give me a chew, I'll kill that dog.
goddamn, I'm going to kill him the first thing in the morning. Now, you stop that. Now, shut up. Meanwhile, there's a guy downstairs stealing everything you got. That's why crooks don't care about dogs. They just say, look, go ahead. They're not going to pay any attention to the dog. Just go right on in. You watch horror pictures with the mummy. The mummy, I don't know who made these mummy movies. But you always see the mummy going right down the middle of the street. And nobody's out there or nothing. He's just going straight, and the dog is trying to tell everybody, hey, there's a guy out here. What is he? He's walking like this with his toilet paper hanging from him on his head. And you better go out. Will you shut up that noise? Go. Anybody here on a St. Bernard? Do you really? He's not a watchdog, is he? Oh, you're silly for having a St. Bernard watchdog. St. Bernard's too big and fat. They can only bark once. Yeah, you've never heard your St. Bernard bark more than once. They can't go 3-4 times in a row. Hey! If they do two of them, they have a heart attack. I mean, they'll frighten you just by the drool dripping from the mouth. That's the thing that frightens me. I hate to see a St. Bernard when he's drooling. I had a friend of mine drown one time. Bernard went up to him, and the guy just couldn't. He started swimming, and he just couldn't make it. But you only get one bark, and then they have to clear their eyes. Yeah. Now, them little dogs, I hate those little teeny ones. Anybody have one of those? Not the Pekingese. I mean, there's a little ghetto dog. About this big. And their eyes are big. Their eyes look like they have a gland problem. They're bigger than the mice. Bigger than the mice, smaller than the breadbasket. And they never stop barking. You go to somebody's house, you could have been there 400 times. That dog will always act like you've never been there. Hey! And always eating the back of your shoe. Hey! And the whole time you're walking around, yeah, George, it's nice to see you. Hey! Boy, I'm sick of them. And you say, shut up, and they just... I saw a fly knock one over one time. I was so happy I cheered for the fly. And the fly really got tired of the dog barking. Just went... Hey! And that's all those dogs are good for, to point out where the flies are. Hey!
All right, that was Bill Cosby with a piece called Dogs, taken from his album entitled The Best of Bill Cosby. The Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you are indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way, and some of you... perhaps arrive there through our swell website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. And let's see, earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Les Schobert, a consultant on zoos and captive wildlife with about 30 years of experience, including a 15-year tenure as general curator of the North Carolina Zoo, and a somewhat more recent stint as animal collection curator at the L.A. Zoo. He's also been intricately involved with the Ruby situation I mentioned earlier, and we've mentioned a bunch of times on the show here. So let's remind you of the phone number to join us, 949-824-5824, as we welcome Les Schobert to Talking Animals. Are you there, Les?
Good morning, Duncan. Yes, I am.
Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
My pleasure.
And, you know, as I mentioned, you have about 30 years' experience in the world of zoos, and I want to, you know, definitely tap that expertise momentarily. But among the many things I found interesting about your background is that you basically sort of grew up working with exotic animals, almost like the family business. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, my father was a veterinarian, and he started with Busch Gardens when they moved to Tampa back in 1956 or 57, so I... You know, it was common for us to have lions around the house or, you know, raised a chimpanzee when I was in junior high school and, you know, just kind of part of our life, and our vacations were always to go visit something having to do with animals.
Wow. And did you also, you know, sort of as part of that life growing up, work with elephants even basically as a kid, it sounds like?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I didn't work directly with them when I was a kid, but,
right.
You know, was around them.
Sure.
And was around a lot of the people that did work with them, got to know them very well. And then when it came time for me to go ahead and start full-time doing this, then, you know, I already knew most of the guys. And
sure. Yeah, yeah, kind of. Yeah, so that sort of propelled you into the zoo work, I'm guessing, just growing up that way. Just, as you say, if you've got lions around the house and you're hanging out kind of with elephants, I guess it was sort of a natural step, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, originally I was going to go to vet school, and then I kind of fell into this, and then I liked this so much more than the prospect of going to vet school, I decided to stay with this.
Well, yeah, because if I'm not mistaken, did you sort of step right into this world out of college, like Busch Gardens or something, right?
Yeah, the last day I took my final exam, I started that afternoon working for Busch Gardens.
Wow, and from there you went on to really build up a long illustrious career, and I'm sure again we'll touch on other parts of that resume as we delve into some of the other issues I really want to explore with you today. I also want to remind our listeners that this is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. We're speaking with Les Schobert, a consultant whose experience includes 30 years or more, really, working for zoos or with animals and across the country. You can join the conversation by calling us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, or you can IM us via AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is Talking Animals. Les, one of the chief reasons I wanted to chat with you is that you bring a really, I think, pretty singular view to looking at the current state of zoos. I mean, after working for zoos, you know, so long, you sort of stepped away from that world a few years ago. So you have kind of a, what to me seems like kind of an insider-outsider perspective.
I really did. I really quit in disgust because the animals weren't receiving the attention that I think they should have.
Well, then let's dive right into that. Let's put that perspective to work. What are the key, you know, sort of challenges facing zoos that you know about either firsthand and you know, maybe cause you to sort of leave that world or just generally?
Well, I think number one, everyone has to realize that the animals are there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And when you come into a zoo, all you're looking at is where the animals are at that point in time. I think everyone has to begin to evaluate what happens to the animals when it's too cold for them to come outside. Where do they go at night, and how do they spend their evenings?
Yeah.
And what animals are in the back areas that are not on display, you know, for various reasons, either they don't get along with their cage mates or their conspecifics or a lot of different issues like that. And I think people have to start realizing that we have to provide a high quality of life for these guys in zoos, or we shouldn't be allowed to have them, period.
And so with that in mind, Les, what kind of changes to the habitats or environments at zoos would you recommend or some of the better zoos starting to implement now?
Well, I think the whole term of zoos needs to be reevaluated.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, you know, it used to be back in the early part of the century that to see an elephant, you had to have an elephant in your city.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't true anymore. You know, to see an elephant, you don't need to have one in your city because you're going to see videos and, you know, Animal Planet and things like that about the elephant. And I agree, you know, there's nothing like experience actually seeing one live and up close, but that doesn't mean you have to have one in your city. You can fit the elephant to an environment that will be conducive to its quality of life. And that does not mean having an elephant in Chicago. They don't do well in Chicago.
Well, also, Les, as some listeners may know, the Detroit Zoo took a pretty significant step recently by announcing they would no longer exhibit elephants at all because, and you know, correct me, Les, if I don't have this completely right, but they concluded that elephants just shouldn't be and couldn't really be exhibited at a zoo.
That's true. In the traditional zoo, I totally agree with that. I feel like elephants in North America should be put on preserves. In a natural social grouping, herds of elephants is not three or four elephants or even five or six. Herds are rep- representatives of the species that cut across the age line. So you'll have teenagers and 20s and 30s and 40-year-old cows. And then when the babies are born, they stay with the herd. And the matriarchs of the herd will take care of the herd, and they'll teach the young elephant how to grow up and be an elephant. And I think that natural kind of grouping is very important. And you can't do that in the traditional urban zoos that we know. And I think what we have to do is have regional complexes that specialize in the animals that are indicative of that kind of a climatic zone.
Okay, I want to come right back to that. Les, looks like we might have a caller. Do you want to take a quick phone call?
Absolutely.
Cool. Hi, you're on live on KUCI. It's Talking Animals. You're speaking with Les Schobert.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to pose a hypothetical question to Les and just kind of play devil's advocate for a minute and ask him the question, why zoos at all? I mean, isn't it kind of just an act of arrogance on our part to think that it's okay for us to take these animals out of their natural habitat, lock them up in cages, and come and look at them? Are there reasons for zoos to exist that are beneficial to the animals?
I think there are. I think you can provide a high quality, I say you can. Now, when you see lock them up in cages and walk away from them, I agree you shouldn't do that. But if you provide a good environment conducive to a high quality of life, then I believe that you can have these animals for people to look at and appreciate and wonder about them they can become an ambassador for the wild. Wild should be number one. But there's so many factors that we can't control in the wild because of the political situations. For example, I recall when Idi Amin was in power in the Congo, you know, they went out and machine-gunned animals down and certainly reduced, if not eliminated, some of the species that were there. Well, you know, they could be lost forever if we didn't have some kind of a repository for them.
I see.
But I think if we do it properly, I agree with you. If we can do it properly, then we shouldn't have them at all.
Are there any zoos that you know of that are using their operation as a sort of a forum from which to promote just sort of wildlife preservation in general and respect for animals? And any zoos that are doing a really good job of that?
Absolutely. There's a few zoos that have dedicated a tremendous amount of resources to going back of the and providing for the research being done in the wild. Bronx Zoo does a lot of that, and so does National Zoo. And also, it's an educational process. You know, even in the wild, the animals are on preserves, which makes it a big cage, a big enclosure, I should say.
Right.
So a lot of the captive management techniques can be used in the wild.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time, and it's a pleasure listening to you.
Thank you.
But I appreciate your interest.
Thank you for your call. Les, so with that in mind, maybe let's go back to kind of also what you were saying just generally about, like, for example, the very nature of elephants, their social structures, the great distances they roam every day in the wild. Given that, what's the likelihood that other zoos will follow suit from what Detroit has done? I know San Francisco, for one reason or another, decided to move their two remaining zoos off into a sanctuary. But, I mean, is that just going to be sort of the exception to the rule for the time being?
Well, I hope not. What I hope is that it's the beginning of a trend. And I think we should rally behind this kind of a trend.
Mm-hmm.
And encourage zoos to... For example, if we had four elephant preserves in the southern part of the United States, so everybody in California gets together and buys 200 acres someplace,
mm-hmm.
put their resources instead of into their institution into that elephant preserve, then we could all share in that preserve, and you know there would be no losers; it would all be winners.
Yeah,
the public could go and actually see how elephants work are in a true naturalistic enclosure.
Yeah,
the elephants would certainly be much happier, and the zoos wouldn't have to expend all of the resources on a silly little enclosure.
Yeah. Well, and also, too, another thing that would be great about that, if that were practical, because, again, where I thought the caller was first going when they mentioned playing devil's advocate is, I mean, let's say, like, I have a, you know, I have a 9-month-old son, let's say, which I do. And I, you know, it's, I want to expose him to animals, but of course I don't really want to go to zoos. So, you know, I'm right there struggling with that that issue, and will be as he grows up. So yeah, if there was a preserve like you're describing, that would be the answer. And I guess short of that, it's off to Africa we go or something.
Well, that's right, wouldn't it be nice if you had the elephant preserve outside of San Diego, and you had the tiger preserve in Texas, and had the armadillos in Louisiana, and you know, so you could actually, as you're traveling, stop in and see all of these animals in a more of a naturalistic habitat rather than going to the city zoo, walking through it and spending 30 seconds in front of each cage. And then, you know, moving on.
Right, right.
I really think that's where we're headed. And the urban zoos will have zoos that we can completely recreate their environment for them. For example, the reptiles and perhaps some of the birds and some of the small mammals. You can actually reproduce a good habitat for them in an urban environment.
Sure, sure. Les, looks like we have another call. Would you like to take another call?
Absolutely.
Great. Hi. Too late. All right, they'll call back. All right, also, Les, when, yeah, I really like this idea, although, you know, the thing it sounds like that we might be up against is that's going to take some time probably to see even the first, look, we have another call. Let's try again. Hi, you're on live on KUCI. It's Talking Animals.
Yes, I have a question for your guest, please.
Sure.
Hello, Les. I've really enjoyed listening to you. There's an article in the Toronto Star paper today about the Toronto Zoo being one of the largest, and I think it has about 718 acres. Is that, could you kind of give me an idea, is that considered a very large zoo? I've been to it once, but considering, how would you compare it sort of to other zoos that you've seen?
Well, it's huge. It really is. Most zoos, and again, I'm saying most, they're traditional. For example, I think the Los Angeles Zoo has about 20 acres total, and most of that is devoted for the public.
Oh.
I worked at a zoo in North Carolina. We were lucky. We were a state zoo, and we had 1,500 acres. But then it takes a lot to develop that kind of a facility. But it's all over the map. But most of the urban zoos are quite small, and they're usually in an urban community. I've been to the Toronto Zoo a number of times, and they certainly have a number of good things going for them.
Right. Well, I just happened to notice when I was there the last time several years ago that for the first time I'd seen elephants. It seemed to have a fairly good place to roam. It wasn't good enough, but it certainly was the best I'd ever seen. So I was just wondering if you'd ever, I'm glad to know you have visited it, because I've never been back because I hate to see them there anyway.
Yes, I think that Toronto is one of the better ones. I think that, again, I don't think it's large enough. I think we would have to start with 10 acres, but Toronto has a number of elephants as well.
I think
the Toronto Zoo having elephants is that the climate is not conducive to hold them.
No, of course, exactly. And I think I counted about 15 that day. But anyway, what I was noticing in the paper today, they said their attendance is up this year so far by 14% and 2% higher than 2002. So I guess they must be feeling pretty good about all this. But I was just interested in the acreage and what you thought of it, you know?
Well, it's a lot of acreage. I'd like to see it devoted to more animals, that more species that would be conducive to live in the Toronto climate.
Right. Well, thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you, and I appreciate
Bye-bye.
Your interest.
Thank you for calling. And we actually have another call holding, Les.
Cool.
All right. Hi, you're on the air live. It's the Talking Animals on KUCI with Les Schobert.
Oh, hey there. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if there's any kind of body that would put pressure on zoos to move these elephants into sanctuaries. I mean, is there among zoo officials, like, are they open to that, or are they clinging really hard to having elephants exhibited?
Unfortunately, I think most zoos are, because they feel like the public wants that.
Yeah.
You know, they will say that the public won't see that it's a real zoo unless they have an elephant. So our education process starts with the public.
And
on the other hand, there are a lot of animal rights and animal welfare agencies that are actively trying to educate the public and let them know that, you know, this needs to change, and please write your zoo director and your mayor and your congressman or whoever it might be. Right now, for instance, there's a movement going on trying to remove the elephants from Chicago, which in Chicago at Lincoln Park, they're only out 6 months out of the year, and then it's in a relatively tiny space, so the rest of the time they're stuck inside on concrete.
Oh, geez.
Which is not good for the elephant at all. I mean,
of course
you
not.
Can imagine if we had to stand on concrete,
yeah,
24/7. But with elephants, it's even more critical because of their body mass.
Right.
And
aren't the sorry?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, what about the people at the Chicago Zoo? Surely they know it's not good for the elephants to do that. I don't understand why they cling to these things so hard.
Isn't it about money, Les? I mean, isn't it like, hey, our zoo has to have an elephant or, you know, that's not going to bring in as many people?
Well, they feel like that the public will complain that they don't have an elephant.
Right.
But as San Francisco has done... the citizens of San Francisco got together and told the zoo, absolutely not. Send the elephants out, and we will not have elephants here.
Yeah.
Well, what a tremendous step. I applaud the people of San Francisco.
Yeah.
And then Detroit as well, you know, for them to say that. San Francisco, excuse me, had a problem with their elephants. They had two die within 2 months.
Oh, geez.
So that stimulated the activity at the zoo to get rid of them.
Yeah.
But Detroit did not even have any kind of animal elephant problems. They just decided that they could not provide a high quality of life for those guys in Detroit.
Yeah.
In Chicago, it's the public. The key is in the public. What a voice the public has in this.
Yeah. Thank you so much for...
I'm sorry. If you have access to the web to get on there and look up elephants and... humane elephant issues and things like that, and you will find that there's a number of agencies in defense of animals and Humane Society of the United States are both heavily involved in this movement trying to improve the quality of life for elephants.
Oh, that's so great to know. Thank you so much for educating me today.
Thank you, and I appreciate your support.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean it's slow. It's like anything else, but it is a matter of educating the public. I mean that's why, you know, when you're speaking or if there's websites and publications and, you know, let's hope some radio shows, whatever. I mean, slowly but surely, I think that's, as you say, Les, that's the way that we're going to make some progress on this. I mean, anything short of that, there's not going to be enough pressure, right?
Exactly. And Duncan, when you and I met at the Paws Sanctuary, the elephant sanctuary.
Yeah.
When we saw that. You know, the rolling acreage with the elephants out there just having a great time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then you come back and then you show footage of the local zoo where they're standing in a little pen in concrete with their own feces nearby and people throwing popcorn and yelling at them and carrying on. You know, there's no comparison.
Yeah. No, I mean, when I was up at that sanctuary, I told my friends and family, I got teary. I mean, those elephants seemed so happy, and they had room, and they were just grazing. They were just doing what elephants do, even though they were, you know, still in captivity, and, you know, obviously in a sense. But, and then at one point when this really nice, we got some pictures on our website of this nice elephant Annie being hosed down and then getting into her so-called jacuzzi. I mean... those elephants were really happy, you know? And you just don't see that, you know, in captivity. So,
indeed. And,
yeah.
And I think that we have become more sensitive to the elephants' needs because we've come to admire them with their intelligence and their needs. And now we need to pay them back and meet those needs. The jacuzzi, for instance, you know, that's a payback because those elephants had to stand on concrete all the time.
Right, and they have all their foot problems, and even under ideal circumstances, they have foot problems if they're just in a small space like that. Yeah. Hey, also, Les, that reminds me, when we did meet at that thing, and I heard you speak at this conference, perhaps my favorite thing you said was when you called elephants the most charismatic species. And I mean, I'm bonkers about elephants, obviously, too, but so I probably share your view. But what exactly do you mean by that?
You know, I just read in a book over the weekend something that really typifies elephants, and that it said the art of being an elephant. What a wonderful way of stating it.
Mm-hmm.
They're so unique. They're huge, but they're very sensitive.
Yeah.
I mean, if an elephant is going to step on your foot, they know that they're going to step on your foot. You'd be better off with the elephant stepping on your foot than me. Because the elephant is going to feel that sensitive, and he will withdraw his foot.
Step on
your foot accidentally. Now, if he wants to step on your foot, you're going to have a bad afternoon.
At least. Yeah, maybe beyond that day. Yeah.
But, you know, they're so sensitive. And then their sense of smell is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't even have a vocabulary for our sense of smell.
Yeah.
You cannot describe a smell without liking it to another odor.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, smells like a skunk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't have that vocabulary, but they can. They are so sensitive.
Yeah.
And then their hearing is the same thing. You know, just look at their massive ears, and they turn it around like a radar. And now we're learning about their subsonic communication, where they have communication over tens of miles in the wild, and we weren't even aware of this until about 10 years ago. Now we're just finding out about it, and they listen with their feet somehow.
Wow.
We don't even understand it today.
Yeah.
So, you know, you tell me that these things aren't absolutely fascinating about this creature.
Yeah.
And it does not deserve to be chained up and made to do tricks by playing a harmonica. I mean, what a demeaning thing to a magnificent beast like this.
Yeah, well, I've seen some of the ugly tricks. The harmonica thing I haven't seen yet, but I hope I never do. So Les, we're kind of just about reaching the end of our time, but along these lines, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't spend a moment or two speaking about Ruby and kind of, you know, what's your view and involvement in this, and more to the point, what's the latest on the Ruby situation?
Well, number one, I'd like, my hat is off to the citizens of Los Angeles for supporting Ruby coming home and being sensitive to the Ruby issue, because she did spend 17 years with another elephant there and developed a strong social bond with her. And so the caring is there in the city of Los Angeles. Great. And then Mayor Hahn just last month declared that Ruby indeed would be coming back. Those are all the good parts. The bad parts is the zoo has already begun to dismantle their elephant exhibit, and now we're concerned with what Ruby will be coming back to.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to find out what the zoo intends to do and how they intend to do it, but we don't want her to come back to a worse situation than she was when she left, or even worse than where she is in Knoxville.
And is there still then kind of a movement afoot that, depending on what the answer to that is, to take her, since she's already in Knoxville, to the Elephant Sanctuary in Nashville and just have that be maybe the best solution? Or?
Well, there's a number of different views out there. That's mm-hmm. certainly one of the views.
Yeah.
It would be in her best interest.
Yeah, absolutely.
But,
yeah.
You know, everyone has their different opinions.
Yeah, this thing has become
the mayor said that she should come home, of course, that he was not aware that, you know, her situation had changed at that point. I applaud him as well for making that decision, but unfortunately, the things have changed. So I'm anxious to find out what the zoo says about the whole situation.
Yeah. All right, so that's where it is right now, is that she's going to be leaving the Knoxville Zoo. What we don't know is if she's coming back to the L.A. Zoo, since there may not be a proper place to have her live, or whether she might end up at the Elephant Sanctuary in Nashville or somewhere yet to be determined.
Well, I, for one, will be at the forefront to keep her from being put into a worse situation that would diminish her quality of life anywhere.
Yeah, well, it sounds like she's in a pretty bad way there. I mean, she just, that sounds like she hasn't integrated, and things have been really rough for her in Knoxville. So it's got to be better than that, no matter what happens next. Let's hope.
Well, We're going to make sure of that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I hope the citizens will keep their finger on the pulse of this whole issue, because these animals don't have a voice. We're the only voice that they have.
Right. And I just want to remind the listeners along those lines to visit SaveRuby.org for all kinds of information and updates and where you can write letters and be involved and help Ruby wind up where she should. So, Les, I think we've just about reached the end of our time here today on Talking Animals. But, gosh, I really thank you for your time. And it was just so fascinating. And I just think the work you're doing is so great.
Thank you. And I really appreciate the opportunity. And really a great set of callers.
Yeah, no, we had some
very
really
well informed and very good questions.
Yeah, well, we do our best. We're trying to get everybody happening and everybody bright and educated, and so everything gets better, including for people like Ruby and other people whose names we don't even know that are elephants. When I say people, so
we'll keep up the good work.
All right, Les, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, take care now.
Bye
bye. Again, that was Les Schobert. I want to thank him again for joining us today on Talking Animals. And Duncan Strauss, it's you are listening to Talking Animals on KUCI in Irvine, 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. It's time now to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. Again, pretty much like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related. And I'll play a little snippet of this tune. There'll be a prize. That's right, a prize, just like the prizes I mentioned earlier in the show for the news segment, the quiz. So for the first caller who correctly identifies this song, it's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And someone had been teasing me why this has not been on Name That Animal Tune yet, given that there's a little family fondness for this band, if not this tune. So not the kind of thing you'd normally hear on KUCI, but just for a snippet, it's Name That Animal Tune on KUCI. Can you name that animal tune so far? All right, we can't play much more of this or I'll be ousted from the station. So, if you happen to know it, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI. Can you name that animal?
It's Freebird!
Okay. All right, what's your name?
My name is Doris.
Doris, where are you calling from, Doris?
Anaheim.
Cool. Well, we're really kind of running short on time, so I'll tell you what, much like before, if you could email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com, you and I will figure out what prize you want, and we'll get that to you. But do you have any pets, really quickly, any animals that live with you?
I have a cat, and his name is Otis.
Cool. All right, we'll give our best to Otis. If we had more time, we'd find out more about Otis than you, but we're really running a little bit late. But thanks so much for calling, and congratulations on winning Name That Animal 10.
Skinnered!
All right, okay. Wow, all right. So I'm Duncan Strauss. We have reached the end of our this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. Want to thank again our guest, Les Schobert. Really a cool guy doing interesting work with a lot of experience and expertise, obviously. So really thank him. And also thank you for all the for listening and for the great phone calls we received today. Next week we will be out of town, so there will be no Talking Animals. So there will be a special two-hour edition of the Serena Sharp Show. Then we'll return 2 weeks from today when our guest, sort of not coincidentally in a way, will be Carol Buckley, the co-founder and director of the Elephant Sanctuary in Nashville, Tennessee. So I hope you'll join us for that on Talking Animals 2 weeks from today, Monday, August 30th. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include just today alone the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m. we offer Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan, followed at 5:30 by Counterspin. And that's just Monday, folks. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like this virtually each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning. Then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. On the music side of the KUCI schedule, I also host a show called The Dead Air Zone, Thursdays from 8 to 10 p.m. It's truly eclectic, from Afrobeat to Zydeco, that's A to Z, for those paying attention to them, and everything in between. So when you have a chance, please check it out. Again, I urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. When you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, I encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, animal comedy bits, news stories, anything else I could pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease. This is a great, great blues show here on KUCI. And this has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, and Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're going to close things out here with an animal-related tune. This is the Untouchables with their peppy version of The Lonely Bull. We'll catch you back here in 2 weeks on Talking Animals from KUCI.